Being Prime Minister of any country is a tough job. Being Prime Minister of Kosovo may have a higher degree of difficulty attached to it than most. Quite a lot of the world still does not recognise Kosovo as a sovereign state. It has an at best volatile relationship with its neighbour Serbia, which still technically believes Kosovo to be a temporarily escaped province. Kosovo is still struggling with the repercussions of the war which won its independence 22 years ago, not the least of which is seeing some of those who led that struggle awaiting trial in The Hague for crimes against humanity. These unusual challenges are now being confronted by an unusual leader. Albin Kurti has been, in his time, a protester, a prankster, and a political prisoner. His first stint as Prime Minister, beginning in February 2020, imploded in a matter of weeks. He was returned to the job in February this year when his party, Vetvendosi, or Self-Determination Movement, won big in Kosovo's parliamentary election. This special edition of The Foreign Desk is an extended interview with Albin Kurti via Zoom from his office in Pristina. How does the career outsider adjust to being the ultimate insider? Are any of the tactics and techniques of the provocateur useful to the politician? Is there any prospect of reconciliation with Serbia? And or is it likelier that Kosovo might amalgamate with Albania? This is The Foreign Desk.
I think that my courage comes from the struggles that I was engaged in. But at the same time, it comes from the conviction that what we are doing is right. What is a torment for me is not really the suffering as such, but rather anxiety if I have dilemmas which way to go. So for me, much greater is the hardship of not being able to choose the right path. Whereas once you have chosen the right path, I think the right path gives you enough power to move on further in spite of any kind of liabilities or difficulties whatsoever.
You're listening to The Foreign Desk. I'm Andrew Muller. Prime Minister, welcome to the programme. Let's start by talking about the recent dispute on Kosovo's border with Serbia over license plates. I understand that you were enforcing a reciprocal rule there, but were you surprised by the severity of Serbia's response that Serbia got as angry as it did?
For 10 years, Serbia made all Kosovar citizens who traveled with their vehicles to Serbia to pay €5 for Serbian temporary car plates. From 20th of September this year, we decided to have this reciprocity measure, not with the idea to have barriers, but rather to leave them all together. However, Serbia did not like that. That's why they have put first roadblocks, different illegal parallel structures, which were building barricades in the streets and roads which lead to the northern border crossings. And then we had to go with special units of our police in order to defend the border crossings, but likewise to defend our border police. Serbia overreacted by bringing military equipment. And at the top of everything, fighter jets, MiG-29, together with the Russian ambassador to Belgrade, Mr. Harchenko, who came to inspect the amassing of troops at the border with the Minister of Defense of Serbia.
I know it may not be that high on your domestic list of priorities, but it's clearly going to be high on your list of foreign priorities, managing Kosovo's relationship with Serbia. Do you have much in the way of hope for it? Are you optimistic about how the two countries can live next to each other in future?
I think that we all should be optimistic because there is no other way. I believe that we have other disputes, but the centerpiece of future comprehensive agreement between Kosovo and Serbia should be mutual recognition. At present, we have mutual non-recognition. Therefore, we need to recognize each other. And towards this goal, I believe that we could have a declaration of peace initially, where we agree that we're not going to make any attacks on each other, a non-aggression declaration. We should deal with missing persons issue because that is a burning issue and it cannot wait. The anxiety of the families is even larger than their sorrow for their loved ones who are missing over 22 years after the war. And I also think that European Union is an important factor, offering a frame for future agreement because it must be in the spirit of EU values, namely rule of law, democratization, facing of the past, and I would insist on certain reciprocity of minority rights across the border. Perhaps best would be not only between Kosovo and Serbia, but entire Western Balkan six.
On that thought of coming to terms with the past and acknowledging what has gone on in very, very recent history, is that a difficult thing for you to do personally? You were, of course, sentenced to 15 years and ended up serving nearly three. Is that difficult for you personally to get past?
Well, we have to be responsible politicians and officials, and I have to represent the people and listen all those who have been having great losses and sufferings during the war. And I consider myself lucky because I'm alive. So I think missing persons issue, then over 10,000 unarmed civilians who have been killed, and among them it's over 1,100 children, those should be the priority. Likewise, we have a big trauma with around 20,000 women and girls which have been raped during the war. So when you take all of this into consideration, my almost 3 years in prison do not weigh much. However, my personal experience, of course, makes me even more credible to have sympathy and empathy with all these people who suffered and lost a great deal.
You may not recall this, but we first met in Pristina in October 2004. You were protesting against the UN-sponsored elections of the time, and I can remember us having a conversation as you led a donkey along Nena Teresa Boulevard, draped in a cloth which had "Vote for Me" written on it. And I'm just wondering, if you go back to that moment, did you have any inclination then that this is where you would end up?
Of course not. I had no idea how my future will be. I always knew much better the future of the country than the future of myself. So I knew that Kosovo will become independent one day, but United Nations mission in Kosovo was an authoritarian administration without accountability to the local population and no internal democracy in decision-making. However, the waves of political activism brought me first within the system as representative of citizens who voted for us, and ultimately in these last couple of years as Prime Minister.
We did meet again in Tirana in 2005 at this conference that had been organised by Erion Veliaj. And I did ask you at the time, because I do write all this stuff down, whether you had any ambitions of going legit at that point. And you said, no, the Kosovo Action Network, which was then the name of your party, is not going to become a political party. We have higher ambitions than that. Did you change, or did you manage to change the system?
Well, I think that the system changed after Declaration of Independence, but also I must say that I changed as well, perhaps not in terms of goal, but rather of strategy and experience, in a sense that I was dealing more and more with socioeconomic issues as years went by, and I was more involved in a social democratic way of thinking, which I believe ultimately helped a great deal to participate in the elections and turn a civic organization into a political movement and then into a political party.
Do you think you've been able to bring at all the techniques and philosophies of the disruptor and the outsider to work in government, or do you have to learn a whole new set of skills?
I think that there is always this difficult dancing between legality and legitimacy. You can be very legitimate in your goals and actions as a political activist, and sometimes that can be considered illegal. On the other hand, you have all set of legal things going on, which might not have much of legitimacy. And I think that in this difficult dancing, we managed pretty well. Of course, we had to learn the skills of administration and running offices in different institutions. But on the other hand, this essential grain of idealism in us remains with us wherever we go and whatever we do. And I'm very happy for that.
Has anything you've learned about actually governing made you, in retrospect, any more forgiving of the politicians you were protesting against?
Perhaps I was not fully aware how much this saying of an Italian author is true. Democracy is a procedure. So certain things cannot happen fast enough because democracy as procedure does not allow you to do so. So when it comes to velocity of certain processes, I think that perhaps my expectations were a bit high.
You learnt the hard way in your first stint as Prime Minister how quickly power can come and how quickly it can go. You lasted 51 days in 2020, plus there was a bit as acting Prime Minister ahead of new elections. What did you learn from that experience, and why did you get, I guess, outmaneuvered there? Was this the last-ditch resistance of the old guard of Kosovo politicians who'd come up through the KLA?
After we won in elections of October 2019, former president of Kosovo was not happy with the coalition that we created with LDK. And he wanted to use pandemic COVID-19 very early on as a pretext to declare the state of emergency. Basically, since he could not change our constitution and turn our republic into a presidential one, similar to France and US, let's say, he wanted to do this through backdoor by declaring state of emergency, where he would have taken a lot of executive powers. And that is where the dispute came about. Basically, the old guard did not want to recognize the result of elections and the successful coalition which we had. They also used some of my junior partner politicians and managed to pass successfully a motion of no confidence. I believe that it also had to do with this idea turned into a project for land swap between Kosovo and Serbia, just an euphemism for partitioning Kosovo, basically. And I was one of the most ardent opposition leaders to this project, which is a recipe for renewal of bloodsheds and conflicts in the Balkans.
What is your relationship now with that old guard, that Kosovo Liberation Army generation, several of whom, including the most prominent of them, former Prime Minister and President Hashim Thaci, a man once described by Joe Biden as the George Washington of Kosovo, is now awaiting trial in The Hague?
There are KLA fighters all over political parties. But it was former president who wanted to somehow monopolize the historical narrative for political gains. I never disputed their contribution during Liberation War, and I was part of that as well. But then again, after the war, different things happened, and I think that many of those who were prominent in KLA with political power started to get material gains. And then it's when their idealism deteriorated.
Are you happy, though, seeing somebody of Hashim Thaci's stature within your country awaiting trial in a foreign jurisdiction?
Absolutely not. I would love them to face trial here for corruption that they did in Kosovo, because they are mainly responsible for a brutal, abusive privatization. And likewise for the tenderomania, where the bidding for public works went to the businessmen who were closely linked with them. Therefore, they should have been facing trial in Kosovo for peace crimes to our economy and society, and not to a sui generis court which lacks proper transparency and is dealing with something that already was treated by ICTY, by UNMIC courts, and by EULEX courts. It's another specialist court. We had enough of special treatment. I would like some normal treatment. I would like some normal courts in Kosovo who deal with crime and corruption.
On that subject of special treatment, is the NATO presence in Kosovo, KFOR, which has been there since 1999, still necessary, do you think? It's just short of about 4,000 troops, I think, the biggest part of which are American.
Due to Resolution 1244 of Security Council of UN, adopted on 10th of June 1999, KFOR is here to stay, and I don't think that this will change anytime soon, because Resolution 1244 cannot be replaced that easy. And on the other hand, NATO is necessary here as long as Serbia does not recognize us, and as long as Kosovo is not joining NATO. You have this interesting, slightly paradoxical situation where instead of Kosovo being integrated into NATO and EU, it is EU with its mission and NATO mission, namely KFOR, which are integrated within our country, a place which is kept strangely outside of international community.
What's your view now, though, on the prospect of Kosovo joining not necessarily NATO or the EU, but joining Albania? You occupy the rare distinction of being a head of government who is also a citizen of a foreign country. I believe you've even voted in Albanian elections. What is your thinking on that now?
I think that if there would have been two referendums, people would vote for unification. I am, as a prime minister here, who won on a ticket of jobs and justice to fight corruption and also bring employment, especially for youth and women. So in this mandate, this is my priority. But in the future, of course, I would not exclude it. However, I believe that for long-term peace and stability in the region, the best and fastest way forward would be if six countries of Western Balkans get integrated into EU at once. Of course, some of them do not want to join NATO, but Kosovo surely does. Kosovo and Albania are two states, but we have the same language and we are one nation. When we declared independence, we did not declare it against Albania, but against Serbia. On the other hand, there are so many people in EU who have dual citizenship. I think that there are many people who have three passports, and I would really encourage them to vote in all of the countries where they are citizens and have citizenship of those countries.
How would you vote in a reunification referendum?
Well, I think that in the future, once it would have been presented as a democratic referendum, which would have been conducted in a peaceful manner, I would have voted yes. But again, I repeat, only if it can be done peacefully and democratically.
You mentioned a couple of times the Jobs and Justice program, which, as you see it, you were elected on and now have a free hand to implement. I want to ask about the justice section of that. What are you thinking of specifically when you talk about the justice part of your Jobs and Justice program?
We are starting a reform of judiciary with a vetting process, first with prosecutorial counsel and judicial counsel, because vetting process should start from top to lower levels and then be included as a permanent mechanism. We want also to have a transparency regarding the wealth and the origin of the wealth for prosecutors and judges, but likewise to check their credibility, their professionalism, their integrity, and so on and so forth. Because prosecutors are generally passive, around 200 of them, and judges are generally inefficient, around 450 of them. Therefore, we need some wise and efficient judges and some active and energetic prosecutors.
And how difficult is it going to be, not least because of Kosovo's geography? This is a small landlocked country bordered by at least one country which doesn't recognize it. How difficult is building an economy from that starting point?
I think it is completely doable according to our program and some of our results so far. Tax revenues for the period from January to September this year have increased by 34% comparing with 2020 and by 21% comparing with 2019 without changing fiscal policy at all. And exports increased by 68%. These are the positive economic externalities of democratic elections and institutional stability that we have in Kosovo. World Bank said that Kosovo experienced a contraction of 3.1% of GDP in 2020. And now Central Bank of Kosovo is saying that our economy will grow with a double-digit percentage for the first time in its after-war history. On the other hand, Kosovo police carried out almost 500 police operations, almost 800 raids and searches, and we have destroyed 31 criminal groups. In spite of the problems with Serbia, we can do well at home. And I think this is due to uncorruptible cabinet ministers, people that we do have, who are well-educated, who come generally from middle class, and who do not want to get rich from their positions. Because for us, politics and office are about public service, not about private gains. On the other hand, we have done a new budget with which we are giving much more money now to education, to healthcare, to agriculture, to local producers, and to help publicly owned enterprises to get out from the current crisis. We took office on 23rd of March, and there were zero vaccines back then. There were zero contracts on vaccines and no negotiations about contracts. And today, as we speak, we have administered 1.6 million doses of anti-COVID-19 vaccines, where 55% of population with the age over 16 years old have gotten two doses and 64% at least one dose. We are at the top of Western Balkan 6, and we are very proud of this. So yes, we are going to deal with the problems that we have with Serbia, but meanwhile, we are going to develop and progress internally.
How important to that internal progress is greater external recognition? You still have, of course, five countries within the EU, Spain, Cyprus, Greece, Slovakia, and Romania, which still refuse to recognize Kosovo.
I think that it is very important for us to have more recognitions in general, and in particular from EU countries. We have five non-recognizers in EU and four non-recognizers in NATO. Namely, Cyprus is not part of NATO. I believe that it is very reasonable to expect that we are going first to join NATO and then EU. Not just because of Cyprus, but also because of different criteria that exist. However, it is not easy because EU itself is undergoing certain hardships. So they have some internal problems, these five non-recognizers. But even if they can see some similarities between certain regions which exist in this country and Republic of Kosovo, I always urge them not to compare themselves with Milosevic Serbia. Because Serbia engaged its military and police forces into genocide in spring 1999. And these countries have not done anything similar to their citizens in certain provinces that are there.
Do you feel like you still have a case to make in terms of having Kosovo recognised by about a tenth of your population within Kosovo? This would be, of course, the about 140,000 ethnic Serbs who still live within Kosovo's borders. How do you turn Kosovo into a country where they're going to feel at home as well?
I am convinced with my contacts and communication from the Serb community that they like exactly what other citizens of Kosovo also prefer: jobs and justice. And with reform of the justice system and fairness of the institutions, I believe that we can integrate Serbs and create this resilience towards the attacks from Belgrade. Belgrade is doing everything to make integration of Serbs in Kosovo unnecessary, but at the same time, those who still do integrate get under pressure from Belgrade. I believe that EU should start facing Belgrade, should start facing President of Serbia, because he is very much engaged in these destructive politics, which bring us back to the late 90s. There is certain similarity, I must say, between Serbian politics towards the neighbors and the Russian Federation ones. They also create certain satellite parastates in the neighborhood, which want to render dysfunctional states which are at the vicinity and turn them into failed ones before taking them over. So if we continue with this analogy, Serbia is like Russian Federation, Republika Srpska in Bosnia and Herzegovina is Belarus wannabe, and Montenegro is like Ukraine.
We spoke a bit earlier about your journey from activist and outsider and disruptor to Prime Minister, and I do want to come back to that now in terms of how it informs your general approach to politics and possibly to life, because you have had an experience which few of us mercifully have had, which is to stand in the dock in a court of, as you saw it, a hostile occupying power and being told you're going to prison for 15 years as a very, very young man. Does coming through something like that, do you think it gives you a certain fearlessness?
I think that my courage comes from the struggles that I was engaged in. But at the same time, it comes from the conviction that what we are doing is right. What is a torment for me is not really the suffering as such, but rather anxiety if I have dilemmas which way to go. So for me, much greater is the hardship of not being able to choose the right path. Whereas once you have chosen the right path, I think the right path gives you enough power to move on further in spite of any kind of liabilities or difficulties whatsoever.
Is there any part of being the outsider, the activist, the protester that you find yourself missing? And I mean, this is not something you stopped doing all that long ago. As recently as 2018, you received a criminal conviction for setting off tear gas in your own parliament. Is that something you'd like to do again one day?
I fully agree with you that it's a bit too early for any kind of nostalgia. But I also must say that I have never been radical in my character. That's why many people were a bit surprised with some of my actions. But I never hesitated to be radical on certain issues. That's why I managed to keep my consciousness above the processes in which I was engaged in. And what I always took care of is to meet as much people as possible directly face to face. I started to use Facebook very late. I was more into face to face. And what I miss now is precisely this, that I do not have the time and the opportunities to meet people for lengthy discussions. I meet people generally in certain events that are well organized with protocol, which become quite ceremonial for my taste. And on the other hand, I meet people during election campaign. So I miss meeting people in their everydayness and lengthy discussions when I used to organize them for protests and demonstrations, because then I got really to the bottom of issues, and that is not possible anymore.
Just finally then, I'm reminded of something that was said to me by Edi Rama, now the Prime Minister of Albania, shortly after he was elected, and I spoke to him in Tirana at around that time. And he spoke of the difficulty of trying to get used to the idea that he was, in fact, the prime minister of an actual entire country. He said that when it became clear to him that he had won the election and he was going to be the prime minister, he all of a sudden felt dwarfed, very, very small. And you will know, of course, that is even funnier coming from Eddie, who is a very, very large man. But have you felt like that? Does it seem like a strangely daunting position to have ended up in?
I must admit that sometimes it does, in the sense that you have all these legal advisors who tell you what is not possible. So there are moments when you think that you have been making more decisions when you were in opposition than when you are in office. And I think that has to do, on one hand, to legal concerns of all the administration. And on the other hand, it has to do with the legacy that I have inherited due to previous governments.
Prime Minister, thank you for joining us. That was Albin Kurti, Prime Minister of Kosovo. And that's it for this episode of The Foreign Desk. We'll be back next week, and look out for The Foreign Desk Explainer, available every Wednesday. The Foreign Desk was produced by Emma Searle and Christy Evans. Christy also produces The Foreign Desk Explainer. From me, Andrew Muller, thanks very much for listening. Until next time, goodbye.